Thanks for the introduction and the invite. Today I'm going to talk about weak measurement in conformal field theory and holography. So this talk is based on these two papers. The first one is about weak measurement in a conformal field theory of Luttinger liquid. And the second paper is to describe the weak measurement holography. So local projection measurement. Let's first talk about the motivation. So we projection measurement often induce a radical change to the wave function. For instance, local projection causes the function to be unentangled. So we can imagine we project a subregime of a many-body system consisting of many qubits. To a product state, then the subregime that is being projected will be unentangled from or disentangled from the rest of the qubit. And in general, because the many-body state is complicated, this is very hard to describe. However, in conformal field theory, we have a very effective description for local projection measurement, and it is described by so-called slit description or slit, right. So we can imagine have this cylinder to prepare the ground state. So this is the imaginary time direction, and we imagine to make a passing angle to prepare the ground state at time tau equals zero, and then we do a projection on this subregime with length L. So the procedure is to cut through this passing angle by a slit in the imaginary time passing angle. And then we use conformal transformation to bring the cylinder with a slit onto a upper half plane, such that the slit becomes this straight line here, cutting off this half plane. Then this half plane is described by a boundary CFT, and this is in general. Projection, local projection measurement is described in conformal field theory. And of course, in this situation, we are projecting the state onto a boundary state so that it can have BCFT description. So then according to this BCFT description, in a holographic system, we know how to describe it. So here's the cartoon picture for the description of local projection measurement. So M denotes the CFT before measurement. So it has a lot of entanglement to support a geometry in the bulk. So Z is the bulk direction. Tau is the imaginary time, and this is the spatial direction. Before measurement, it has a lot of entanglement and it can support a geometry in the bulk. Then after measurement, basically, because this is a projection measurement, it will destroy all spatial entanglement so that there is no enough entanglement to support the geometry. So this is basically nothing, a trivial space-time. So if we understand these two limits, then we must know that there are will be something to separate these two things. One is the original space-time, the other is just this trivial space-time. And this quantity, which is a co-dimensional one, is called end of the Wolverine. And this is how local projection measurement is described in a holographic system. And in this case, the boundary state actually has trivial space-time too, because it doesn't have any entanglement to support a ball. We have also done a few works on this local projection measurement, but today I'm going to talk about the weak measurement. So as I talked before, boundary state has no entanglement and has a trivial space-time too. The question is, can the more general measurement support finite entanglement and non-trivial space-time? So here's an example of such a measurement operator. So we just consider a measurement operator on a single qubit. So sigma z is the Pauli matrix acting on that qubit. And this is the measurement operator. W is a real number. When W is zero, then this operator is just an identity. It does nothing. When W is infinity, this is proportional to a projection because now for spin up, so a qubit is equivalent to a spin one half system. So for spin up, the amplitude is infinite, is amplified a lot to compare to the spin down component. So this becomes a projection to the up state. Now, with that kind of local weak measurement, we can consider a many body system with many qubits. And we consider, for example, acting such a tensor product of this operator on that wave function. And we keep W to be very general. It is between zero and infinity. So it interpolates between the original ground state and the boundary state. Then the question is, for a generic W, what is the resulted state? And how to describe this holographically? So here is the outline. In the first part of my talk, I will focus on measurement in the Luttinger liquid, which is also a compacted by a boson CFT. And later, inspired by the result from this Luttinger liquid, I will talk about how to describe that in holography. So Luttinger liquid, yes? Is that the question? Luttinger liquid, there is a very simple way to realize the Luttinger liquid. So we consider a chain. Each side has a spinless fermion, and the Hamiltonian has two terms. One is the nearest neighbor hopping, and the other is just nearest neighbor interaction, T and V. So these are two energy scales in the question. So then the ground state of this Hamiltonian is described by a Luttinger liquid. So it is also the compacted by free boson with central charge 1. This Luttinger liquid will have left mover and right mover. It is described by a number, unique number that is given by the ratio between the interaction and the hopping. So it is useful to remember that this ratio, which is called Luttinger parameter, has the following cases. So when there is no interaction, V is zero, then Luttinger liquid is one. When we have attractive interaction, V is negative, that means K is greater than one. Otherwise, K is less than. So this is very useful to remember. Then once we have prepared the ground state of this Hamiltonian, we implement a weak measurement on the ground state. So here, rho denotes the ground state of the Hamiltonian, and then we implement M, which is the measurement operator. So the target density matrix is given by this operator, and measurement operator is given here. So it is again a tensor product of local weak measurement operator. I forgot to mention this Ni denotes the local Fermi density. So it actually gradually project the ground state onto a state with a staggered density. So it measures the occupation number in a stagger for this measurement M, because you can see here is a stagger pattern minus one to I, which has the momentum pi. So this inhomogeneity creates effective potential that can scatter left and right moves. And this is why we try to design such a measurement operator, because we know when we have such a term in the Hamiltonian, it will basically open up a gap. So the effect of such operator will be or can be relevant to open up a gap. But remember, here we only apply the operator once after we prepare the ground state. It is not a term in the Hamiltonian. In the boson language, this is the vortex operator, and depending on the situation, the vortex operator can be relevant or irrelevant. And this kind of measurement, yes.
What is the index M here?
This M, or it just denotes the measurement. So this is just after the measurement.
So what does this outcome correspond to?
You know this little M?
Yeah.
I just want to use this to distinguish from the previous row, right? So before measurement, we have row, and after measurement, we have row of M. M denotes it is, we have the measurement.
Okay.
One more question, Shokai. So can I think of this weak measurement as like measurement plus post-selection?
Yes. I will just talk about this here. So we can implement such a weak measurement by coupling the system to ancilla qubits, and then we do the projection onto the ancillas, not to the system. So the net effect of such procedure will be to imply weak measurement operator to the system. We only project out the ancilla. And of course, you can see here, when W is infinity, we get a projection measurement. In general, for finite W, this is a weak measurement.
Right, there is still a post selection in the measurement of the ancilla qubit. That's why you get.
That's why, yes. We need to post select the ancilla qubit. But this kind of weak measurement can be simulated via, for example, a variational quantum algorithm, where we have actually a unitary circuit. And the target state is this state. We know this state can be prepared by unitary circuits. So we just, in variational quantum algorithm, we prepare the circuit with some variables to be determined, with some parameters to be determined, using some classical quantum hybrid algorithm. So actually, this can be done without post-selection. Post-selection is a more direct way to do that.
I see. Okay, thanks.
Right, and to look at the effect of measurement, let's look at the path integral representation. So imagine we have a path integral to prepare the ground state. And then at time equals zero, so we apply the measurement operator. And here we introduce a UV cutoff to smear the measurement operator a little bit, and then take epsilon to zero, such that we can write down a path integral representation of the measurement operator. So the measurement operator after this smearing is given by this. And its path integral is here. So matrix elements determine the boundary condition for this path integral. And S of M here is nothing but the measurement operator. Remember, previously we have this weak measurement operator, which is a staggered potential, and it becomes this operator in the path integral. And we properly normalize this W such that we have the correct strength of this measurement. So the full path integral is given here. So we have H is the original Hamiltonian, the CFT Hamiltonian, and then we have a measurement just exists within this stripe, constrained by plus minus epsilon, and F is such a smear function. So F is basically zero outside this regime, and it is this number inside this regime, and it is properly normalized such that when we integrate out or integrate imaginary time for F, we get one. Then when epsilon goes to zero, this becomes a delta function, direct delta function. So eventually the measurement is described by a interface at time direction. Here you can see we have the original CFT action, and we have a interface right at tau equals zero. So the full passing integral lives in the entire complex plane, and the weak measurement creates an interface at tau equals zero. Then to tackle this interface problem, we can use bosonization. This is just a schematics to derive bosonization. Remember, we know this measurement creates a potential that scatters between left and right movers. So we have left scattering between them, and using bosonic operator, we have this vortex operator, and eventually we get a cosine term. So in terms of free compactified boson, we have the following action. Here K is the Luttinger parameter. So this is the free boson, and then we have a interface operator with effective strength V. So V is proportional to W. So V is just the interaction, sorry, it's just the measurement strength. And this becomes a vortex operator. So the renormalization group equation has been worked out in this nice paper. There are just two parameters, Luttinger parameter and this measurement strength. From the other equation, we can see measurement strength is controlled by the Luttinger parameter. On the other hand, Luttinger parameter is not affected by measurement operator. So intuitively, this can be understood because the measurement only exists at a co-dimensional one manifold, and it is not able to renormalize the system deep in the bulk. So then the Luttinger parameter doesn't flow at all. So there's a question on chat. What do you want?
Yeah, I don't see a question on chat.
I see a question on chat, and it says more detail on this S on this action. Oh yeah, so this, let me explain this as one more time. So we have the procedure is that we want to prepare the ground state, and on the ground state we act on the measurement operator. So here, the first term is just coming from discretize, discrete coming from a discretization of the imaginary passing integral. So we have this kinetic term, and the second term is the Hamiltonian basically of the CFT. So the first two terms combined together gives the action of the CFT. So this action will basically give you the partition function. And if you cast through the action, cast through the partition function, you get the ground state by taking, so here tau is the imaginary time direction. I'm taking beta to be infinity. So zero temperature. So it is infinite in the tau direction. So when we cast through this passing integral, we get the ground state. And then we act on a measurement operator on tau equals zero slice. And this is the effect of the final term. I hope this helps. Right, and let's continue to talk about the other equation. Right, so Latin integer parameter doesn't receive correction from measurement because measurement happens only on its light, right? On the other hand, the measurement strength is renormalized by the Latin integer parameter. So it actually depends on the Latin integer parameter. So when we have attractive interaction, meaning that k is greater than 1, then you can see this is becomes negative and the measurement is irrelevant. When we have repulsive interaction, it is relevant. So the RG flow equation, so RG flow diagram is very simple. So here we have k equals 0, we have a marginal measurement case. And on the two sides, we have the measurement to be relevant or irrelevant depending on the Latin integer parameter. So we expect such a phase diagram according to the RG equation. And then when k equals 1, the measurement is marginal. So you can see from RG equation, and actually this is exactly marginal because when k is 1, we get a free fermion theory. So there is no interaction to trigger a RG flow.
I have a question. Sorry. Is there an easy way to see why the measurement operator you chose should lead to a term like psi L dagger psi R after bosonization? Oh,
Oh yeah,
sorry.
so you can imagine this term can carry a momentum type, right? So in the original model, the chemical potential is zero. We have a half beating Hamiltonian. We have a left mover and right mover, and then the momentum difference between these two movers is exactly pi. So when we create such a term here, it carry a momentum pi, so it can scatter a left mover to right.
I
That
see.
is why we have this scattering. And it also doesn't break E1 symmetry, so you must have such a term. So I talk about the RG flow and I allude to the phase diagram. So what do I mean by the phase diagram? The phases are distinguished by its entanglement property. So to look at this, to distinguish these two phases, we look at entanglement of subsystem with length x. When the measurement is irrelevant, the entanglement is quite easy. So it reduces to the CFT without measurement. And entanglement entropy is 1/3 log x. This 1/3 is coming from the fact that the central charge is 1. On the other hand, when the measurement is relevant, eventually it will flow to an area long phase with a constant a leading term, right? And the sub leading term is a power law correction. And the power law is given by this power. And it depends on Latin integer parameter. So here is the phase diagram. Again, depending on the Latin integer parameter, we have irrelevant phase, which reduce to the original CFT, and we have the relevant phase, which eventually becomes an area law with the sub-leading correction. And in the phase transition, it is very interesting because we now have a log function for entanglement entropy with an effective central charge, which is not 1, which is actually a function of W. So to verify our prediction, we implement a DMRG calculation. So we simulate the SXZ model, which is equivalent to the spinless fermion after Jordan-Wigner transformation. So basically, delta is a function of interaction over Hopi. Delta is a function of V over T. And then we simulate different phases. For example, for the irrelevant phase, here we use k equals 1.7, which is greater than 1. And this figure, we have two lines. They are parallel, and this is a log linear plot. That means it is a log function, and one of the line, this blue line, doesn't have measurement, and the other has the measurement. So we can see the effect of measurement is actually irrelevant, because it doesn't change the central charge, basically. It doesn't change the entanglement. On the other hand, we simulate the relevant phase. Here we choose k to be 0.7, which is less than 1. So we trigger the RG flow. And now the situation is more interesting. The left side, we don't have measurement here, so we recover this. This is actually a log function given by the unmeasured CFD. And once we turn on the measurement, it suddenly changed to a power law behavior. That means measurement is relevant perturbation, and we can extract the power law. And here is the power law as a function of K. Dot means the data from DMRG, and this line is coming from this function. So our prediction is very close to the DMRG data. So I talk about the relevant phase and irrelevant phase. Let's look at the critical point. At the critical point, we don't have interaction, and k is equal to 1. So we have a free fermion theory with left and right movements. And here I bring them together to be a direct fermion in 1D. So we have left mover and right mover. Sigma z is the Pauli matrix. This is not a qubit. This is just to denote the subspace of left mover and right. And our measurement operator creates a potential that scatters between left mover and right. So this is the sigma x. It is effective in mass term because sigma x anti-commutes with sigma z. So it scatters between these two and it opens up a gap. Before we look at the entanglement entropy, let's ask what other similar measurements can be implemented to give an effective mass. If we include the possibility of superconductivity here, to incorporate the superconductivity, I enlarge the spinner to number spinner, so we have both electron and hole. There are two additional mass terms. The first one is the SSH mass, which is basically given by sigma y. So sigma y also anti-commute with sigma z, so it is a mass term. We can also have p wave superconductivity, sigma y mu x. So mu is the Pauli matrix acting on the number space. So it basically tells us a pairing between electron and electron. It also anti-commutes with sigma z. So this is another mass term. In a low energy theory, the effect of all these terms is the same because they all open up a gap. So we expect to have a universal behavior for all the three measurement protocols. Although I just talk about the first one. But there are actually three of them that are equivalent. Now let's look at the way to extract the entanglement entropy in the marginal case. So here is our, remember this, the lower figure is the path integral. We have the measurement at tau equals zero. And we are interested, for example, in half chain entanglement. So So to calculate the entanglement, we need to insert twist operator to the right half, for example, here. And it will create a branch cut. And this problem is closely related to defect CFT via a space-time rotation. So we do a space-time rotation. We rotate the defect from a space defect to a, from a time defect to a spatial defect. Now we have left CFT and right CFT, and they are separated by this defect. We doesn't change the branch cut, but under so this branch cut will calculate the entanglement between left and right. Again, after this kind of conformal transformation, these two calculations are equivalent. So this conformal transformation is to map this angle direction onto this y direction. We can imagine to start from angle 0, and then we rotate to angle pi. So we start from angle 0, and we rotate to angle pi. And we will encounter the defect twice, right? At angle 0, we already have the defect. And at angle pi, we see the defect again. And if we keep moving on, at angle 2 pi, we see the defect once more, right? So at every k times pi, we will see the defect. Here, the theory is replicated to n replica. So we are going to see, and finally, we are going to identify 2m pi to be 0. So this is the case for weak measurement. And what is the case for this defect CFT? The situation is a little bit different. Now we can start from minus pi over 2. So here is minus pi over 2, and we see the defect. And when it goes to pi over 2, we see the defect again. So this blue curve is the defect. Then you can see the same pattern, right? The only difference is that we just shift the position of defect from an integer to half integer. But we are going to identify this as a cylinder. So we are going to identify this line with that line. Such a shift is just a relabeling of coordinates. So actually, they are calculating the same quantity. So the message is that when we calculate the half-chain entanglement after weak measurement, it will be equivalent to the half-chain entanglement of a spatial defect at 0. And luckily, this type of question has been studied extensively previously. Here, for example, in this paper, they calculate the effective central charge. Sorry, they calculate entanglement between left side and right side in the interface CFT. And the entanglement is given by log function with a effective central charge given by this function. So now we can just use that function, and the entanglement, the half chain entanglement is basically given by this quantity in a weak measurement. So to demonstrate this, we also calculate numerically entanglement entropy using this fermionic Gaussian state simulation. And we find that the effective central charge extracted from this half-chain entanglement match the result quite well. So you can see here the dots are coming from numerical simulation, and the lines is this exact result. And also this is matched very well when you, even if you plot this in a log scale. And we also simulate two other cases, these two different mass terms, and they all match quite well. And this is the story of the weak measurement in CFT. So basically, we see that the measurement can be either relevant, marginal, or irrelevant. And we see different behaviors for the entanglement entropy. And the interesting case is when the measurement is marginal. In this case, we can see a effective central charge. Yeah, I forgot to mention this effective central charge, the argument S is a function of the measurement strength. So S is a function of W. And inspired by this calculation, we will explore in the following how to describe that in a holographic system. Before that, is there any question now?
If we consider the limits to the projective measurement, what is the corresponding value of small s?
This is a good question. I remember S is a cos of W. So S is zero, I think, in the limit you
Okay.
mentioned. So C effective will be zero in that limit. By the way, how long do I have?
You have 20 more minutes, including questions, so maybe like 15 minutes.
Okay. So let me move on. So let's describe this in whole holographic system. Remember, we have this imaginary time passing interval. Now let's place this imaginary time passing interval in this way. So it is actually the boundary of a gravity system. This is the boundary. We have the measurement given in this stripe. And then that's denote the central charge of this unmeasured CFT to be C1. And the effective central charge to be C effective. And as I said, we have three different cases. The measurement can be irrelevant. In this case, we recover C1. It can be marginal, which means we have an effective central charge that is between 0 and C1. When it is relevant, we get 0. So the target for a holographic dual is just to find geometries that satisfy the asymptotic boundary condition, which means it's at the boundary it should match the CFT data, basically. So then we have a new axis going to the bulk. So Z is the bulk coordinate. And the bulk is given by some geometries. We expect two bulk geometries. So M1, in the future and the past, the boundary condition is given by the unmeasured CFT. M2 is dual to the measurement. So the boundary condition is given by this measurement regime. And M1 and M2 are in general different. So we expect something to separate them. This is similar to the end of the warp brain. Now we have an interface brain because both M1 and M2 are non-trivial. So we have an interface brain separating these two geometries. And we also expect this brain at the boundary will end on tau equals plus or minus epsilon. And this is our expectation. So we consider Euclidean action with M1, M2, and also the junction between them. And the parameter we have in this gravity system is the ADS radius L1 and L2, which gives rise to the effective central charge before measurement and after measurement, C1 and C effective. We also have the tension to describe this interface brain. And K denotes the extrinsic curvature. So for this action, the bulk solution is simply given by this ADS metric. What we need to do is to determine the brain, the interface brain, by matching boundary conditions between these two regions. So this is given here. This is a side view of our previous geometry. So we just view from this side. It becomes here. So we have different bulk regimes. And then this, the horizontal axis is the time direction. And then because the path integral respect time reflection symmetry. So we have this dashed line denoting this time reflection plane. And the end of the warp plane will end on plus or minus epsilon. So we can bring equally the coordinate here. And the trajectory of the interface plane is so simple. It is just given by some angles. Here, these two blue lines, they denote the interface plane, and actually they are identical. I identify these two by the dashed line, so they are actually the same plane. It is just to for convenience to represent that in another coordinate on these two coordinates. And these two angles, which measures the angle from the plane to this normal direction, is given by the function here of tension and the ADS radius L1 and L2. So the angle is determined via matching condition between these two regimes. So the tension is located within the range because we know this function must be less than 1. So it is located within the regime. And here is the phase diagram. So remember, we have three parameters. We can have actually two dimensionless parameters given by these two numbers. And we can find a solution within this triangle. This is just the range here. Let's talk first about some special points. So first special point is when L2 is very small compared to L1, basically zero here. So this is the BCFT limit. In this limit, remember L2 is actually proportional to the effective central charge of the measurement regime. So when L2 is zero compared to L1, that means it is a this is just a vacuum because or this is just a trivial spacetime because we don't have enough entanglement to support a bulk geometry. And then this interface plane becomes end of the warp plane. So we reduce to the local projection measurement scenario. This is for that special point. And the other special point is when L2 and L1 are equal and T is zero. Then these two geometries merge into one. This corresponds to an irrelevant case. Apart from these special points, in the middle, it corresponds to the marginal case. And I will talk about the entanglement structure in the middle. So let's just consider the entanglement of a subsystem after measurement. Remember, again, this is the time direction, and this is the spatial direction. And this is the time reflection invariant plane. And according to this time reflection symmetry, the RT surface, which is to calculate the entanglement of subregime A, will be located right at the time reversal invariant plane. Okay. And in this case, this time reversal invariant plane is entirely located in the regime ADS2. We have this ADS2 regime and the time reversal invariant plane is located within that region. So the geodesic of this, geodesic length is of this is just given by a simple formula. The prefactor is given by the ADS radius in this regime L2. And then we have a log function. According to RT formula, this translates to entanglement entropy. So it's minimal surface over 4G, or the geodesic density in our case, over 4G. And then we can see that the effective central charge is given by the ADS radius over the G Newton. And previously we talked about a space-time rotation to get the to have the connection between interface CFT and the weak measurements. We can do it here as well. So the metric is symmetric in x and tau. So space and time, it is symmetric, as you can see. So we can simply make a rotation. We exchange x and tau. And the metric doesn't change much. It is the same. So is the solution of the brain. So the brain will be the same, except we exchange x and tau.
Before going to the rotation stuff, are you only considering the positive tension case?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Yes, I'm considering a positive tension.
What is the reason you don't consider negative tension?
There are a few reasons we don't consider that. First of all, the effective central charge must be less than the original central charge, right? So C effective must not be greater than the effective than the central charge before measurement. That means L2 must be less than L1. And if you look at this limit, so for the solution to be exist, this is greater than zero.
I see. Where does this inequality potential come from?
This is coming from the existence of such a solution. So I have this. This is an angle variable, and this function, the absolute value of this function must be less than one. So this will give us such a range, basically.
Right, I guess this brand solution only considers, I think it implicitly considers the positive tension case, no? I mean, if I consider negative tension case, one need to consider a brain intersection or some fusing the brain, two brains together.
Yeah, you are right. So we don't consider that kind of, that is a good, very good point. We don't consider that kind of solution. We only consider these two brain, they don't intersect.
Okay.
So that we need to add, we don't need to add, for example, a defect term in the, on the brain. Right, and let's talk about the right. We have this rotation between x and tau direction, and this once again becomes an interface CFT. So now this is the x direction. We have left CFT, right CFT, and we have an interface in the middle, right? And this is the time direction. Such an interface CFT in holography has been also extensively explored previously. And now let's just focus on two very special cases. The first one is when one of the RT surfaces anchors on the defect and the other anchors on the CFT. The second case we consider is when the RT surface is symmetric. So both ends on the CFT and is symmetric. For the first case, one ends on the defect, the other ends on the CFT. We can calculate the geodesic length given by this log function plus a constant. This formula, we already take epsilon goes to zero limit. The result is well behaved under such a limit. And this constant is independent of the length. So here the length x is the length of the subsystem from 0 to x. capital A. We believe this constant is UV dependent because the leading term is the log term. So this D is UV dependent. There's no way to subtract the leading term in this case. And for the leading term, using RT formula, we can translate this into entanglement entropy. And the result is intuitive. We see there are two contributions, C1 and C effective. That is due to the twist operator. One of them are located in the CFT regime, giving rise to a C1 over 6. The other is located in the defect regime, so it gives C effective over 6. And this C effective is actually the same as we get from weak measurement. So this kind of results in interface CFT has been studied previously. And here, the new message we contribute is that this C effective also appear in the case of the weak measurement. C effective here. And next is the when the RT surface is symmetric. So we need to calculate the geodesic lens. It has two parts. One is coming from the segment in ADS1 regime. The other is coming from the segment in ADS2 regime. This results, we also take epsilon goes to zero limit. It is well behaved. And then for the leading term, because both twist operators are located in CFT regime, we expect, this is also what we expect, C1 over 6 over 3. And then this time, the constant part is actually a universal data. And this is the boundary entropy. It has contribution both from segment 1 and segment 2. It is UV independent because we can subtract the leading term. So we can subtract the leading term coming from the case without interface. So then the next term, next to the leading term is universal. To back up this quantity, we also calculate a partition function. And from the partition function, we can extract boundary entropy. So the partition function shown here, we have measurement operator, and then we have this factor e to minus beta h. And this is just a overlap given by this function. And it reminds us of this boundary entropy. When we have boundary states, we also calculate the overlap between boundary state and the vacuum. So eventually, the boundary entropy is given by the difference between the action with and without defect. The message is that this is same as what we get from the entanglement entropy here. So these two terms are the same. So naively, this term, so it can be written in a very simple way, rho 1 plus rho 2. So rho 1 and rho 2 are just given by this formula. So naively, it is a sum of two terms from 1 and 2, from regime 1 and regime 2. Independently, but they are actually not independent because psi 1 and psi 2 is a function of all these parameters. Right. So previously we talked about measurement in the infinite system. Let's talk about this in the finite system. We have the same situation here. Instead of half infinite space, we now have a ceiling. So the CFT is defined on a ring, and then this is the path integral. The path integral is just the surface of this ceiling, and then we make the Measurement at plus or minus epsilon. So we are going to find a bulk that is consistent with the boundary condition. Again, we have M1, M2 here. So M1 is due to CFT, M2 is due to the measurement regime. And we expect interface grain that ends at this plus or minus epsilon. We use the same notation. What is different is that for M1, for sure, we know it is a global ADS metric because it is dual to CFT. But for M2, we have two choices. It can be either ADS or BTZ. Here's the metric for M2. I need to wrap up. Right, so there are two scenarios. One is when the interface brain are disconnected. The other is when it is connected, corresponding to whether the dual geometry is ADS or flat. Then the phase diagram is given by, so when these are disconnected, we call it no bubble phase. Because when you look at the time symmetric slice, it is re located within ADS2 regime. On the other hand, this is called bubble phase when this is given by black hole metric. This is because when you look at time symmetric slice, we have a bubble given by this ADS1 regime. This bubble is surrounded by the interface brain. So this is the phase diagram, and I will just to say that the no bubble phase when the for the no bubble phase when the entanglement entropy so of a sub regime will be given by this formula because now the RT surface is located at time reversal invariant plane and it is located within this ADS2 regime and giving rise to this defective. On the other hand, for this bubble regime, the RT surface will actually penetrate to ADS1 regime. Although we have a black hole outside, this black hole has a bubble inside or outside the horizon. But in both cases, we find that the RT surface will penetrate into the ADS1 regime. And in this case, it is dominated by the central charge C1 because most of the dense is coming from the segment in this ADS1 regime. And this is the top view of this time refraction there. Yeah, and let me just wrap up here. And thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Rakai, for the talk. Yeah, if there are any questions, please. Yeah, I had one question. So in the condensed matter literature, there's some recent work about decohering the CFTs associated to a churn insulator or a P plus IP superconductor. And then they find in some cases that there is like the central charge will either become zero or it shifts to some other value. Yeah, I wanted to ask if the first part of your work has any connection to those things.
So when you talk about this work, you mean that it is not a weak measurement. It is a decoherence. That is very different from our case. So in our case, after the measurement, we still have a pure state. But in those decoherence case, they have to consider quantum channel. So you must break the replica symmetry in that case. And the entanglement entropy will be dominated by classical correlation, basically, because once you introduce decoherence, you are allowed to have classical correlation.
Okay, thanks. Are there any more questions from the Zoom audience? Okay, if not, then let's thank Shaukai again, and yeah.
Oh, sorry, can I ask
Oh,
a
yeah, sorry, there's
question?
a question, okay.
So I guess in your talk, you're basically focusing on post-selection rather than the post-measurement state. And I think if you construct a cross-operator, you should also have a state post-measurement state corresponding to the outcome you're not looking you didn't look in this talk. So for such a post-measurement state, other than the well, yeah, the for such a post-measurement state, what kind of entanglement entropy do you expect?
So you're asking if I have a general cross operator and I post selecting onto one of the outcomes?
Yeah, so I think so if you have a, I guess you consider two cross operator, I mean two P of A elements, and you only consider one P of one specific P of A element, and you consider post selecting state.
Yes.
But I was interested in the other one as well.
I see. So the point is that so in a weak measurement case, we have this weak measurement operator. And actually, this weak measurement operator can be incorporated into many kinds of cross operators. So it is hard to say which is the other one. There's no unique a way to implement the weak measurement.
I think in your paper discussing the CFT one, you wrote in this paper the two cross operators. So I thought it
Oh, that
was a
is yeah, that's right. So if you consider that case, so first of all, as I said, there's a no unique correspondence between the weak measurement and the cross operator we design. And second is for the operator we wrote down. I'm not sure. But the point is, it will correspond to an interface state eventually. Maybe this is relevant for the reason I'm not sure. But eventually, it will correspond to some kinds of interface state.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think the usually the boundary states doesn't constitute the entire basis for the Hilbert space. So maybe the issue corresponds to something other than the one described by end of the bar brain, but yeah, I guess it should correspond to some kind of interface.
Yeah, if you
That's
believe after the measurement you still have finite entanglement and you recover some universality, then this kind of universal behavior should be described by some kinds of boundary state. Sorry, some kinds of interface state.
thank you.
Okay, yeah, let's thank Shaukai again. And if anybody wants to sign up to chat with Shaukai online, please let me know.
All right,
Okay,
thank
thanks, Josh.
you.